Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Hey, man. What's going on?
Not much, mate. How are you?
I'm good, bro. Just back into the week-to-week rhythms of the NRL season, going to games, shaking hands, slapping backs, the whole deal. It's great stuff.
Yeah, I'd imagine you're doing a little bit better than Reece Walsh is after last night.
I think even with a facial fracture and a big gnarly scar under his eye, I still think Reece Walsh is probably doing better than me. Just in a relative sense, you know?
I mean, the headline I read was 17-hour bus trip, Nick, so maybe not.
He's not catching a bus. He's not getting a bus from Penrith to Brisbane.
The headline from 16 minutes ago, 17-hour bus trip adds insult to injury for as head clash sidelines Walsh because he's banned from being on the flight home. Being driven back.
Someone's driving him up. He's not catching a bus from Rooty Hill to Brisbane.
What if he's just on the Greyhound or something?
I'll tell you, man, I've caught some long-range buses in my time.
Me too, in America,
You meet some characters on there, bro. Yeah. And it's that old rule that if you can't spot the weirdo on the bus, you are the weirdo on the bus.
Don't have time to tell the whole story, but did you not once meet a guy on a bus who claimed he was going to rendezvous with Sharon Stone in Atlanta or something?
Yep, I was catching. It was when I was in America last year. Me and Coleman were catching the bus from Kansas City to St. Louis, so that's pretty much the entire width of Missouri. And I was sitting next to this bloke who was telling me that he was going to Florida to reconnect with his old high school girlfriend. And I said, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And he said, oh, yeah, you might have heard of it. This is her Instagram. And he showed me Sharon Stone's Instagram.
I want to believe it.
Yeah. And he was saying like, oh, yeah, after Basic Instinct, she just didn't have that much time for me.
It's fair.
But apparently he met James Woods on the set of Casino, and he's a real stand-up guy. So.
Well, I mean, that's aged well.
Yeah. So that guy was a character. I hope things worked out for him.
I'm sure. I have no doubt that they did. But anyway, so you were out there last night, Penrith 34, Brisbane 12. What was the atmosphere like, first of all?
Oh, well, look, the way the Panther games are now, the atmosphere is always pretty full-throated. The crowds are big. The crowds are rowdy. They're very, very parochial, and they've come to expect the best. I got to tell you, you know, it was always going to be a tough task for the Broncos without Haas and Reynolds. If Haas had played, I think there were a fair chance of knocking off Penrith. Even without him, I was like, well, you know, I don't think they can win this, but Walsh and Mamb, if they sort of get some of their stuff going, then at the very least, I think they'll give Penrith a scare. But then once Walsh went down, it was kind of like, well, that's it, really. It just became a bridge too far for him.
We'll get into the game proper in a second, but we do have to talk about the Reece Walsh stuff first of all. So there's been a lot of chat since last night about the handling of head injury substitutions and all that stuff, and about how difficult it actually is to activate that extra player in the NRL. So I'm told that had Taylor May been sin-binned, Reece Walsh's replacement, Tristan Saylor, would have been allowed to come into the game. But since he was only penalised, Saylor wasn't allowed to come into the game, even though Walsh did suffer a match-ending injury, as it turns out. And I've never really understood the criticism of people saying, oh, they'll game the system, because in 100% of cases, the guy you're bringing on is worse than the guy that's getting subbed out. Yeah. So why would any team
if he
ever
was better,
want to...
if he was better, he'd already be in the team, wouldn't he?
Yeah. So, yeah. And I've never really understood why that we've got these lengthy thresholds to stop an extra guy coming in. I think it's a no-brainer to just sort of ease up on that a little bit, or to just have a fifth guy on a bench. You can't use all five. Just so every team can have an outside back on the bench for things like this happening. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think if someone suffers a match-ending injury as a result of foul play, then you should be able to activate your 18th man, regardless of whatever sanctions are leveled against the foul player.
Hmm.
I don't know, man. I was up late last night. I'm with you. It kind of defeats the purpose of having the 18th man if it does make it so difficult to activate. And this is a really clear case where that would have been appropriate, because even though Walsh passed his HIA, the sort of swelling around his eye meant that he couldn't see out of that left eye. So Brisbane were like, well, we can't put him out there when he's, you know, essentially half blind.
Just put him on the right edge.
So I thought that was the system sort of biting Brisbane a little bit. What did you make of the actual tackle itself? Because the charges have come out. May hasn't been charged, although he was put on report and penalized. What did you think of it? Because there's been some controversy about that as well.
So I don't know what the actual rule is regarding like duty of care and all that stuff. Like
I have never heard a referee say duty of care.
Not to a player,
once. Yeah.
So my view is May is flying out of the line to put a hit on Reece Walsh early doors, and that's fine. That's part of the game. I don't think he meant to headbutt him in the face.
Yeah,
but I do think that he was flying out of line to put a hit on him, and it got away from him a little bit. People were saying things in our Discord and stuff about like he didn't lower his body at all. He didn't try to get under the shoulder line and all that stuff. I don't actually know what the rules are on that stuff. Do you?
Well, Ivan Cleary made a good point in his presser, and I know he's the Penrith coach, so we have to take it with a grain of salt, but he said that with the way the sort of tackle was working out, if May had lowered his body in the traditional tackling method, his shoulder would have caught Walsh right in the face, and it would have been a far more dangerous tackle than if he came in with what Cleary identified as like a poor technique if you're coming in that high.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think a penalty is sufficient because of the reckless nature with which May was racing in, but that's enough. That's enough for me. I think
I tend to agree.
Yeah, I don't think he's gone like juggernaut style leading with the head like he's Nate Miles or whatever. Like the Mays are tough to the point of crazy, but they're not that crazy.
No, you know? So what I said in a couple of group chats when people were asking me about this was I believe that May meant to fly in and hurt Reece Walsh, but I don't think he meant to injure him.
Yep, 100%. And that's fine with me. Like that's the way this game is played.
Part of the game.
You know? Yeah. So very unfortunate for Walsh though. Like I don't think they could have beaten Penrith with him, but I'm very confident they would have given it more of a crack, you know? And like, it's no secret. He's one of my favorite players to watch in the whole competition. And now Brizzy are looking, I think the initial diagnosis is 4 to 6 weeks. I'm betting he'll be back in about three, but it just makes it even harder for Brisbane with Haas out for a few weeks. Well, I think they're hopeful that Reynolds is back for next week's game against the Cowboys, but yeah, it's tough without your best two players.
Yeah, it's going to be a lean couple of weeks. And in that article that came out about 20 minutes ago on NRL.com, there are quotes from Broncos head of performance saying a staff member will drive him home. He won't be getting the bus.
I told you.
But bus ride is such a salacious
answer. Yeah, a staff member will drive him.
He's got his Greyhound license and he's driving everyone back.
A staff member will drive him to the bus stop.
Yep. A staff member has dropped Reece at Central Station with $20 to buy some food.
Not even $20, just a bus pass.
Okay. All right. Doesn't get a sausage roll. Come on, Nick. You're a cruel man. But yeah, the Broncos next month is the derby against the Cowboys at Suncorp, then a trip to Melbourne, then another derby against the Dolphins, and then it gets a little easier with they're playing the league leading Canberra Raiders the week after that in Brisbane. So whilst they do have three of their four games coming up that those players should miss at Suncorp, none of those opponents are slouches. And then the fifth game where you had Tigers fans always think that, oh, everyone comes back against us. We're so unlucky. The next game, 27th of April, Campbelltown Stadium.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, so a tough run for the Broncos now.
Tristan Saylor is a very capable
He
backup.
Played really well in that Warriors game last year.
Well,
really
you know, well. This is a story I'll have coming maybe tomorrow or the day after. But I think, you know, Brisbane was so impressive last year at times when they were undermanned, you know, and I'm particularly thinking of that origin period. So I know that like we know that this squad has it in them to really, really dig deep and find some of those championship qualities. I think they're just going to have to try and find it a little bit earlier than anyone thought of. But I'm confident that their program is strong enough that they'll give a good account of themselves even without those stars, even if they don't win the games, if you know what I'm saying. And even if they lose, say, the next three, and they're, what, 1-5, would that make them when Walsh and Haas come back? Like, I'm not exactly, you know, putting the line through them.
Yeah, you know? No, definitely
as soon
not.
As, they get, but... as soon as they get their dudes back, I think everything's going to be fine, but it might just be a rocky road to get there.
And in terms of this game, some weird stuff went against them early on, like not just the Reece Walsh incident, but that challenge in the air, penalty being overturned, I thought was bizarre. Like, the ball's clearly been caught before he starts ripping out at it. Like, yeah, I didn't understand that.
This was a poorly officiated game.
Yeah, and then the Stags and Luai get into a bit of the handbags, and Stags gets penalized for what I saw as really nothing.
Yeah.
And then game and just got away from him at that point.
The Mitch Kenny try, I thought, was a very clear double movement.
Well, Nick, the game's not played in slow motion.
People unironically said that in the press box, eh?
When I saw it the first time, I thought it was fine. And then with every replay I watched, I was like, yeah, it's probably...
Well, Kenny knows himself. Kenny scores, and then he looks straight up at the ref like, what, double movement? Me? Your boy Mitch Kenny? No chance.
Well, no, I
but
said...
Like,
I,
that
I,
was... Go on.
I said last night, Mitch Kenny can promote the ball a little bit as a treat. Try.
And then there was that period just... I think it was just before the Mitch Kenny try. I might be getting it mixed up here. When... Brisbane were attacking Penrith's line for a good 5 or 6 minutes, and I think they had a ruck penalty and 4 six-agains, and there wasn't even a warning from Sutton when we've seen guys get sin-binned in that circumstance before. So Brisbane were already up against it going in, and then things got harder with Walsh getting ruled out, and then things got harder again because they just got a bad whistle through that whole first half. And like I know that, you know, Penrith, We're up against a Brisbane team that where things were falling apart a little bit, but some of the footy they were playing was pretty dazzling as well. And honestly, at 34-2, I thought, oh my god, this could get biblical, you know?
Yeah, we were on Burger Watch for the first, well, sincerely on Burger Watch for the first time this year. And instead, I thought Brisbane did quite well in the last 20 to 25 minutes of this game to not just get a couple of tries, but they aimed up physically. Tony Staggs was running through people on both sides of the ball, and I think they did. I think there was a lot of good things to take out of that last year of the game when you thought, yeah, it was completely getting away from them and it was going to get really, really ugly, to at least bring it back to a semi-respectable scoreline when you consider that their two of their three most important players weren't playing and the third guy got knocked out of the game within 5 minutes.
Yeah, I was like, down 34-2, I was like, I know they're under man, but this is not the Broncos I've come to know. This is not what I expect from Brisbane, even if some of their most important players were out. And I actually think for what I'm talking about, what I talked about earlier, like sort of rallying together without some of their stars, a reasonable finish to this game was really important. Like, man was really good in that final 20. They just sort of like got a little bit back to what works for them, you know? Let's talk about Penrith a little bit. What's stood out to you?
Nathan Cleary should have got 12 Dally M points.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so
he
too.
Was unbelievable in this game. And now I think that's the two best games he's had in the last year and a bit have both been against the Broncos.
Friend
he
of
must
the
be
show,
sick of the sight of him.
Yeah, friend of the show, Scott Bailey, dug out a good stat. He had 6 try assists in 60 minutes against the Bronx, if you take
what,
into
the last 30 of last year. And wow. The pass for the first try is outrageous. And then the engagement with the line for the third try before popping that pass is also extremely good play.
I think that third try is probably my favorite. So showing it under twice, then straightening and double pumping and going short to Tungo. Like, I know he's up against Brendan Piakura in the centers and Xavier Willison at second row, but good footy's good footy.
Yeah.
You know? And like, again, I don't know if this is a classic win for Penrith or anything like that, given how undermanned the Broncos were, but Ivan Cleary made another good point in his press conference after the game talking about their attack. He said they had the discipline to run their structures, and then they just made good attack. They made good choices on the end of it. And I think that's going to be the key for Penrith creatively over the rest of this season. They don't have blokes like Stephen Crichton anymore who they can just throw the ball to and they'll do something. I think it's going to be a lot more sort of structurally based, and a lot of it is going to rely on guys making the right decision in attack and sort of finding the right pass at the right moment. There will be chances out there, but they're going to have to be manufactured a little bit more rather than here's the ball, Bill, kick out, go get him, or here's the ball, Critter, go get him. So I think that's a thing Penrith are getting towards. And I've really liked what they've been doing with Isaac Tonga over the last couple of weeks. I think I said at the start of the season, I still like
him. Ran down Selwyn Cobbo.
Yeah, he did. Selwyn looks great for that first 40.
I was going to say, I didn't even praise his work, especially defensively, when they had to move the team around with Walsh going off. But I thought he was awesome too. But
who, Cobbo?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, he was Brisbane's best player, I thought. Mm. But yeah, Tonga, I've liked him more on the left because I think that's where he can use his skill a little bit more. But if he's just hitting holes on the right-hand side with that speed and that acceleration and that power that he's got too, then that's a pretty terrific weapon. So it's good to see him kind of really progress in that way.
Mm. Yeah, I thought Edwards was busy but had a tough night. Luai, I don't think, had a particularly good night either. It was kind of, again, just Nathan Cleary of their playmakers that really stepped up. But the guys around him, those outside backs especially, were all great. Taruva again, To'o again, they're just all very, very good, aren't they? It's just a bit boring, isn't it?
I'm glad that we're brave enough to say that the Panthers are quite good.
Yeah. Yeah, but once Walsh got knocked out of this game, I think there wasn't a one-eyed Broncos fan alive that thought they still had a chance of winning this game. I don't think. And then it kind of petered out a little bit in the second half. It is what it is. I got to the end of the game and immediately flicked over to the baseball that was on. So a strong win for Penrith. They looked great. I think their attack has the potential to go even higher this year than it has in past years. Does, as you touched on a little bit before, it might need to be a bit more varied this year. And I'm excited to see what levels they can get to against some of the bad teams, because they haven't really had a chance to play any of those yet. So we'll see.
Try! Try! This is a try! Brilliant! Brilliant play! I think it's a try! Oh, I don't know if this is going to be a try!
Gee, what about this bloke?
And now it's time for What About This Bloke, our weekly segment where we talk about a player from yesteryear, usually the late 90s, early 2000s. And this week we've got an absolute banger, Nicholas.
We do. Sitting around and naming old footy players is the finest thing a person can do. It's literally my favourite thing to do in the entire world. And this week we're taking a trip over to Blighty, to merry old England. Our dear beloved patron, Bruce the Pie-Eating Pom, once and always of Wigan, me and Brucey had a great chat on Patreon. He sort of said, he wanted to pick an English player. And he said, can I pick someone who had a great career in England, but maybe not as big in Australia? And I said, mate, that's perfect. Just listen to your heart. And he ended up going with Martin Afaia.
So Martin Afaia is a guy I've obviously heard the name of a million times, but who I don't know that much about for the reasons you just said, because played a little bit for the Roosters and a little bit for the Dragons, about 27 games between those two teams. But then the rest of his 400 and something game career, where he scored more than a try a game, was over in England.
Yeah. So Martin Afaia, obviously a legend of the sport in England, like one of the true superstars of the 80s and 90s in English rugby league. But because his Australian career was a lot more restricted, that qualifies him in this country as a guy. Which is incredible. Like that's the exchange rate in action. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
well,
like,
I mean,
like for like to
Mark Viduka is probably a guy in England.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about here. You know, we are operating on Australian guy time and time zones, time difference, all that sort of thing. You bring a fire over here and he's a guy. But you're right, in England, he was probably the greatest try scorer that the game's ever known, apart from Brian Bevan. You know, 446 tries in 424 matches over 14 years. That's so many tries that it's difficult to actually comprehend it.
It's a lot of tries.
It's too large a number. Like that's more than double Ken Irvine's Australian record.
Getty's all the tries on Fox Sports.
Well, like you can, there's a lot
cinematic experience.
There's a lot of good stuff of him on YouTube, right? And there's the highlights of the time he scored 10 tries in a match. against
a lot of tries.
I think it was against Leeds or something like that. And it just, it does get surreal towards the end. It was like, this is just too many tries for any one man to score in a game. Like this, are we sure this is allowed? Is this legal? Are the police going to lead him away at conclusion of the match, you know?
Yeah, the only thing I really vividly know about Martin Afire, and it's because it used to get played on Boots and All and stuff, is the time he lost a race.
Okay, I think this has never been confirmed, but there has always been a rumor that he maybe wasn't going flat chat in that
one. He also slips at the start, right?
Yeah, so there was two races, actually. So he toured out here with the Lions in 88. And they had a 100-meter race at Wentworth Park, of all places, against Dale Shearer and John Chicka Ferguson, right? Both great, great players in Australia. And Afire cleaned them up. Happy days. And then in 1992, he came out here with the Lions again, and they had a tour match against Parramatta and the immortal Lee Odin Ryan, who could be a guy, who is a guy in his own right. He raced Afire, and he beat Afire. And the rumor always was that the Pommies might have loaded up on the hometown boy. You know, they might have taken those Parramatta bookies for a bit of a ride. And you know what? I salute it. Because you know what's better than being fast? Being rich.
That's right. Odin Ryan had played 5 first grade games at that point.
Well, I think it kind of hung around him forever. Like he was after that, he was like the man who shot Jesse James, you know? Mm. And it was like, well, if he's the fastest man alive, he must be good. And then I don't think he ever sort of fulfilled that talent. But
it's very weird to juxtapose like a grainy video from the early 90s of this guy and then seeing the end of his career is like in a relatively modern looking North Queensland Cowboys jersey in 2001. And you're like, it feels like we went far. It feels like the gap between like the early 90s and the early 2000s in rugby league is so much more than 10 years, if you get me.
Yeah, I get you. Like the game aged really quickly in the mid 90s there, and it became a lot closer to what we know now.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, like you could sit here and rattle off great Martin Afire stats as much as you want. He scored 42 tries in his rookie season with Witness, you know, and won the Man of Steel Award for Player of the Year playing on the wing. When he came out and he had that first year with the Roosters in 89, he got 9 tries in 12 games. He played with the Dragons a few years later, got 11 tries in 14 games. They were bad teams, but he just scored them. He just scored them, man. Like there's a try he scores in the 94 Challenge Cup final that a lot of people reckon is maybe the greatest try ever scored in English football. He got man of the match in the Clive Churchill Medal. He got man of the match in the Challenge Cup final twice.
I'm happy to call it the Clive Churchill Medal.
Again on the wing, like just amazing stuff. And like, yeah, he couldn't really tackle or anything like that. But like, if you're scoring 10 tries a game, who gives a shit, you know? Like,
10 is a lot of tries.
I don't care if you're letting in 4 if you're scoring 10.
Yeah, that's the absolutely good stuff, agree. Man. That's plus 6. Can't argue with that differential.
Mate, that's
if someone scored 6 and let in 0, baby, no one would complain.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Shut up.
That's Moneyball, brother. And he ended up playing forever. He played until 2001 when he was 36 with Salford. And in his last 2 years, he scored 23 tries in 45 games, which is like for still any other winger is an extremely respectable total.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, a guy, surely there's a book or a documentary about him or something.
Well, if there's not a doco called Chariots, then what are we doing?
Because what are we doing? Well, one of great nicknames.
One of the great nicknames. Honestly, almost too creative for rugby league.
Martin Chariots Afire. Unbelievable.
Good stuff. And then just to put a personal touch on it, my old man played against Martin Afire.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Did he also beat him in a race?
Unlikely. The Camptons aren't runners.
Mm.
There are thousands of us. We are a belligerent and numerous family, and only one of us is even kind of fast.
Is it Declan?
No, it's not. Pup looks like he should be fast, but he's not.
Oh, wow. Shots
yeah. No, it's just the truth. And he's running around saying now that he's fast, but he's not. He looks like he should be, but he's not. I remember I said to Dad once, I said, Jim, like, none of us have got any speed, have we? And he goes, no, but we've got guile. And I was like, what the fuck good is that going to do me? You know? And he said, well, it's more applicable to life than speed is. And I was I don't know. But anyway, yeah, Dad was on a tour of England with Parramatta Rugby in the early 80s. They played a team called Rosslyn Park, and a fire was playing for them. So happy days. I can't remember who won the game. I'm going to assume Parra did.
Is that the second week in a row we've had one of our family members playing against someone we've talked about on the show? Incredible stuff. After Bobby Bungard's feud with Gilbert McDougall.
We can't stop winning.
For 5 points, Lee Odenryne in 1993 finished third in the rugby league sprint at the Botany Bay Gift. Can you name either the winner or the second place finish?
Was Brett Dallas one of them?
I would have guessed Brett Dallas, and he did win.
Okay.
But if you get the second place guy, I'll be much more impressed because I'd never heard of this guy. He did go to St. Greg's, though.
Oh, did he? Wow, I should get this then.
Mm.
I was going to say Shane Werrett, but he must have come along a little bit later.
I'm now on the other guy's Wikipedia page, and it says he finished second in a sprint race against Brett Dowse, Lee Odenryne, and Shane Werrett, which means Shane Werrett must have come fourth.
Bugger. Who was it?
John Minter.
Oh, yeah. I actually know John Minter a little bit.
Do you?
Yeah, does a lot of work with like the old boys stuff at school.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, he came second. He beat Lee Odenryne, which means technically he beat Martin Afire. So you talk to him about that next time you see him.
I will. I'll let him know. But yeah, Bruce the Pom, great stuff. Great selection with Martin Afire. And next to it, like, so this time we've ventured far abroad, but next week we're going to be bringing it all right back home because beloved patron Dean Robb, also known as Kicks Outs Out of the Comp, he has been chosen, which means it's probably going to be a Rooster. Dean's one of the great Roosters men of our time.
Is great Roosters men not an oxymoron?
Well, you know what? You can say that today. You can say that today. Yep. So, you know, of Dean Robb, if we was robbed fame, get in touch, brother. Throw up a name. We're going to do it.
Should have had him on today to critique Jerry Sutton. But anyway. All right. Moving on. 14th against first at Project Apollo Stadium in Christchurch. Does it get any bigger? Yes. But this is still going to be a big game as the Raiders of Canberra travel across the ditch looking to keep their hot form going. The bookies don't support it, Nick. The bookies have got your $3 outsiders. What do you make of it?
I think the bookies are wrong. I think we're going to lose. This will be a really interesting one. And I think actually the next 2 weeks are very interesting for Canberra because, you know, while they've won these first two games, I don't get the impression that a lot of people have been overly convinced by a lot of it. You know, the Knights weren't great where and won, the Tigers weren't great last week. But the Raiders have got the Warriors away this weekend and the Sharks away next weekend. And right now I have the Warriors and the Sharks and the Raiders all at a pretty similar level. Mm. And I think the difference between the three teams is the matchups they have against one another. And for the Warriors and the Raiders, I think the forwards are really, really level. I don't think either team will be able to sort of power over the top of the other. But the Warriors' right-hand side is one of the most dangerous attacking edges in the entire league. When they get it right, there's no one that can really stop them. And they were able to get it right a couple of times last week against Melbourne after it sort of fell flat in round one against Cronulla. And the Raiders, because Seb Chris is out, Albert Hopewadi's moved to the centers. And I really rate Albert Hopewadi. I think he's had a really good start to the year with ball in hand. But defensively at center, there could be some issues. There were some issues in round one. The Knights looked really good whenever they went down that side. And the Warriors are going to go down that side early and often. So I'm not thinking that the Warriors win this by a million. And I think Canberra can definitely win this game. But I just think that matchup between the Warriors' right-hand edge and the Raiders' left-hand edge is such an advantage for the Warriors around one of their greatest strengths. I don't know if Canberra's going to be able to make up that advantage anywhere else.
Wade Egan back too, I think, is massive for the Warriors.
No, he's out. He got ruled out this morning.
Oh, I've got it open on my screen. He's still in the starting team. So not
yeah,
playing.
Yeah. But like that's literally only in the last half hour or so.
Oh, okay.
That is a boost. That is a boost for Canberra.
Well, NRL.com has just made me look foolish, haven't they? But a big boost
they?
For Canberra.
How dare
I thought, they? Yeah, I thought there was the gap between him and Freddie Lussick was made pretty abundantly clear last week in patches. I think Lussick settled into the game a little bit well, but it was a really pretty rough start for him. So maybe he'll be better for the run from last week. But yeah, tough going out there without Egan again. He's been one of the better hookers in the comp in the last year or so. Yeah, I agree with everything you just said, mate. I think both forward packs are very good. I'm a little bit disappointed but not surprised that Elliot Whitehead's straight back into the team and that Zach Hosking's been dropped to the bench. I think it's a bit unfortunate that Ricky's done that, but I don't think anyone was expecting him not to. I think Hosking's been the form back row of the competition through two rounds. And it's a little bit, it sucks a little bit that he drops off back down to the bench. And equally shocking, I think, is that Corey Horsburgh's being told to make his return through New South Wales Cup rather than coming straight back into this team. So a team that could have both Horsburgh and Hosking starting has neither, one of whom is on the bench and the other of whom is not playing, I think is not putting Canberra in the best position to win this game. I understand the logic behind wanting to give Horsburgh a run in Cup first and then getting back to full fitness. I don't mind that at all. And with how well Canberra's forwards are playing, I get the idea that you don't want to, you want to shake up a winning side, but you can't say that and then be like, oh, well, Elliot Whitehead, come straight back in for our form player.
Oh, look, oh, there were a lot of Raiders fans that got really bent out of shape about this. I think Horsburgh does need a run. Like, he wasn't able to play in any of the trials or anything like that. And I think throwing him straight into first grade would not have been the right move. So I don't have a problem with him playing reserve grade. Whitehead's a bit of a different case because he did play in both the trials, and as good as Hosking has been, Whitehead's the captain of the side. You know, they weren't going to drop him to the bench. That just was not a thing that was going to happen. You know, like, I've said it on this show heaps and heaps of times, the Raiders are run a little bit differently to a lot of other clubs, and part of that is sort of loyalty to the older blokes in a lot of senses. So it wouldn't surprise me if Whitehead only plays the first 20 minutes and then Hosking comes on, and then maybe Whitehead gets 20 minutes at the end or whatever, but Whitehead was always going to come back into that starting side, you know, as well as Hosking has played. That decision didn't really surprise me in the slightest, you know?
No, fair enough. I just think, I think Hosking's been so good that he's earned that spot, but that one. What can you do, eh?
Well, it's two good games against nearly a decade of service.
It's true.
You know, it's a lot to throw away. And I know a lot of people make comparisons to Croker, who came back through reserve grade last year and was there for 6 weeks before he got back into the first. But Croker had barely played for 2 years. Whitehead was in the team until he hurt his calf in one of the last training sessions the week before round one. You know, it's not really the same.
No, okay. I'm tipping the Warriors. I think they're too good to be 0-3.
I do too. I'm tipping them in a really, really tight one. Sean Johnson's history against the Raiders is just horrible. Horrible. The things he has done to my beloved Raiders as I just sat there and watched impotently. Absolutely horrible. He's kicked golden point field goals. He's scored hat tricks in 6 minutes. He has absolutely destroyed my beloved club. And as a big Sean Johnson believer, I don't know. It's always felt personal. It's always felt personal. Sean, I have offered nothing but support for you, Sean, and this is how you repay me.
And the second time you played them last year was, of course, that crazy golden point game where you equalized on the siren and then lost anyway. So,
yep.
Good times. So we lost that night too, mate. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. That was totally 100% the same thing. But yeah, Warriors in a tight one, but I do think Canberra's capable of winning.
To be fair, I don't think we've won a game since. Maybe tonight.
Maybe tonight's the night.
Roosters, Rabbitohs, Trelion Stadium, 8 o'clock. We'll be there. We'll be square. Oh, okay. Nick.
You know what? I'm backing out here. I'm getting out the paint.
All right.
Teasing it all week, the Ilias talk. Let's have it. Let's get into it.
All right. So people who've read my column for ESPN on Wednesday will already kind of have got a glimpse into my thoughts on this issue, but we can talk about it now at length because we've got the time. And it is a big deal. And to me, the reaction to this has been ridiculous. It hasn't been surprising, though, given what we know about Ilias's connections to certain people in the media and all this stuff. But it's remarkable to me that he's a player who has never been like the darling of any sort of analysis, any sort of read into South. No one's ever come away and said that he's their best player or the most important player. And there were people calling for him to be dropped and for Dean Hawkins to be given a chance as early as late last year. And then it happened. And those same people turned around in a dime and were like, what? They sacked who? They scapegoated the kid, the young fella, the innocent boy. And it's like, this is a guy who's now in his third season in the NRL. He had a solid rookie year where he wasn't asked to do too much, won a couple of finals games. And I will say, I do think to this day that Sharks semi-final is the best game he's played in first grade. But he didn't elevate his game in any conceivable way in 2023. I don't think he got any better at anything. And at some things, he got worse. I think he remained too timid to overcall Cody Walker. He remained incapable of taking control of a game when it needed to be taken control of. And then to start 2024, he had two abject stinkers. And I'm not saying that to tear the guy down. I'm not saying this to be a hater. I would love nothing more than Lachlan Ilias to succeed. If Lachlan Ilias was the next Andrew Johns, that would make me an extremely happy person. That would mean that Seahawks would be winning premierships and winning big games and everything would be great. Why on earth would I not want that? I'm not an idiot, but that's just not the reality that we live in. And so instead, Jason Demetriou made a call that I think had to be made, that I think I was actually a little bit shocked that he did make, because just based on what we've seen from this club in the last year or so, and good timing as well with the Josh Mansour stuff, there is some criticism that he's not capable of making tough decisions, or he's not capable of having tough conversations with players. But this was a conversation that had to happen, and it did, and he had to be dropped because they need to change something. And you're not going to drop Latrell Mitchell. You're not going to drop Cody Walker. Why would you? They're your two most important and best players. You're not going to drop Damian Cook. I know. I will get to that in a second. Jesus Christ, the fallout from that headline as well. And, you know, moving a couple of forwards around doesn't exactly move the needle either. There was only one obvious move to make, and that was to get rid of the halfback and give the guy who, again, won New South Wales Cup Player of the Year last year, give him a chance in the first grade team. He's done the time. He's earned the rights. He's the guy Adam Reynolds was mentoring before Adam Reynolds left, by the way. He's earned his opportunity to get a crack in this first grade team. And it comes in this game, a super important game now that they're 0-2. And to me, it's a decision that should have just come and gone without relatively any. This should have been a happy story, Nick. We should have had some, like, our boy NRL Roasted did a nice little thing talking about the Footy Dean YouTube video. It should have been a great week talking about Dean Hawkins and all the stuff he's gone through and all the work he did and all the, and how he's finally getting his opportunity, not the other way around, not talking at length, not devoting entire television segments to Lachlan Ilias being dropped. Four teams have already dropped their halfback this year. Like, he's not the only one. We've barely heard about Jackson Hastings. We barely talked about Sullivan getting hooked halfway through the game by Benji last week. We haven't talked about any of that stuff. We haven't talked about the Dolphins, Wayne Bennett, dropping his halfback after 1 week. And what happened? They won 38-0 in the second week when they brought back the guy everyone wanted them to bring back. That's neither here nor there. We didn't hear about any of that. But South dropped their halfback.
I'm going to push back on that. Souths are a Sydney club who are expected to win.
Great, that's fine.
That's the difference. That's
totally
the difference.
Fine. Not the and point the, I'm making.
And no, and the Ilias discourse has been going on for a couple of years. So whenever he did get dropped, it was always going to be a really big story. And I know the Footy Dean story is a really, really good one. I hope he does really, really well. Like and subscribe to the Footy Dean YouTube channel. I hope he boots it up again. But Ilias getting dropped is a big story. Like, it's bigger than Hastings getting dropped. It's bigger than O'Sullivan getting dropped. It's a big, big story. Like, pretending it's not is
I'm not just pretending it's not. It's not what I said. I said that three other teams have dropped their halfbacks. One of whom was a halfback who played in the finals last year. Lachlan Ilias didn't, and that didn't matter. That just passed everybody by. But this was round the clock coverage for 4 days, talking about how he was the scapegoat, how he was the fall guy. All this ridiculous discourse from a bunch of people who have not watched South play rugby league in the last year or so. They just haven't watched a game, because if they had, they wouldn't say such stupid things. They wouldn't say such poorly informed things. No one is saying that other guys aren't playing well. No one is saying that Cody Walker hasn't had a slow start to the season. No one is excusing Latrell Mitchell's kick defense last week. No one's doing any of that. Those things aren't happening. But I would love to ask a single one of those people. Actually, you know, some of them are so stupid that if I said, would you drop Latrell Mitchell? Some of them might earnestly say yes, but that's not the point. Only a moron would do that. This was the only change that could or should have been made, and it's been made. Do I think it's a magic wand that's going to fix everything wrong with South? No, of course not. But when Ilias's job in the team is just to facilitate, get the ball to those star guys, make his tackles, get through sets and all that stuff, and he's kicking the ball into his own teammate's ass, and he's dropping the ball cold 10 meters out on tackle two, which he's done 2 weeks in a row, by the way, a change had to happen. And somehow Paul Gallen was the only person I saw in media that actually came out and said, yeah, Ilias has been terrible. So
you're
we're close, back. We're all the way back. You're all
close
the way back.
Personal friend.
He was the only one capable of being like, yeah, well, this guy wasn't playing well. No one else seemed to even mention, no one else that talked about this even talked about Ilias's form or the games he'd been playing. It was just, oh, it's not fair that they're dropping him. Players get dropped every week. Yeah. Better players than Ilias get dropped every week. And guess what? Him getting dropped is not a death sentence, by the way. It doesn't mean his NRL career is over. It doesn't mean his South's career is over. This could be a 2 or 3 week thing. This could be what he needs. This could be an opportunity to go to that, down to Cup, find some form, get some confidence and come back. The idea that South's completely cutting ties with Lachlan Ilias because they've dropped him for one game in the third year of his career is insane to me. And everything that I've heard most people say this week, save from a select few, has made me want to put my head through a wall.
Yeah, it's like when I said it's a big story, I don't want to sound like I was defending the people who were saying, oh,
I knew what you meant. I knew what you meant.
I totally agree with you. We've said it plenty of times on this show that, you know, at some time in reserve grade could be actually really good for him. If you just look at some of the guys playing in this game, Latrell Mitchell spent some time in reserve grade early in his career with the Roosters, you know, so did Joseph Manu. So did Sam Walker last year, in fact. You know, it's not a death sentence, you know, and I agree with you. Souths needed a change, and all those qualities that you're talking about that Souths would want from their halfback, you know, facilitating and kicking well and just sort of like playing their part in the attack without sort of dominating or anything like that. That seems to me like something that Dean Hawkins is going to be really capable of doing, you know, and while Ilias has played a lot more first grade at this point, I do think Hawkins will be a bit of a steadier hand. You know, and part of the reason is he's just more used to steering a team around the park than Ilias has. Ilias has sort of learned on the go. Hawkins has been able to learn in reserve grade, you know, and now it's time to sort of see if he can take that next step. But yeah, it has been crazy. But I also think part of it is this has really been, if you have any shots to level at South Sydney, this has been the week to get him out, you know?
Haven't they just been crawling out of the woodwork? I mean, go back and watch that game where Josh Mansour got dropped, by the way. They had an extra player for 70-something minutes, and he got beaten on the overlap like 4 times. But he only missed 2 tackles, though. And yeah, that whole story came from Demetriou saying, we're resting you this week, which is a nicer way of saying we're dropping you. Like, read between the lines, man. And then we had people say, oh, it's a joke. It's like Luke Brooks at the Tigers. No, it's not. Luke Brooks was called the next Andrew Johns, thrown into a team at a young age, and said, go win us a comp with no help. That's the exact opposite of the situation Lachlan Ilias was put in. Lachlan Ilias was put into a situation where every other guy in his spine has either played for New South Wales, Australia, or both. And his job was to get out of the way and let them do everything. It could not be more different to the Luke Brooks situation. I found that comparison insane as well. And then on top of that, South have, on Thursday, announced the move that Damien Cook's going to start from the bench. A move which, by the way, Penrith did in a grand final with Appy Coruscant and won. But no, Damien Cook's been dropped. Club's in crisis. No, it's not. Teams do this all the time. Junior Ballo started from the bench for Parramatta in round one. Was he dropped? No. This is a tactic that coaches use now where their sort of most dynamic guy going forward comes off the bench and gets a crack at some tired guys after 20 minutes and plays 60 straight. It's not a difficult concept for anyone that's watched the sport to understand. But because it's hate on South's week, suddenly I got a bunch of messages from friends and other people going, mate, what's going on? Why did South drop Cook? What the hell's happening? And I'm like, and I had to tell them, they haven't dropped him. He's going to play 60 straight from the bench. And Havili played really well last week. I think it's a good move.
I do too.
I think everything that's come out of this week has just been miserable, mate. Like, I guess this must just be how Tigers fans feel all the time, where like every move that their club makes is just questioned to the nth degree by everyone in the media, which is not voting well for our future, I suppose. But having said all that...
You know who Lachlan Ilias played his juniors with.
Exactly right. Yeah, how'd they let him go? But, you know what? We're going to win this game.
There he is.
Is absolute nonsense. This idea that the things that Souths are doing are wrong and that these aren't things that had to happen. These are things that had to happen. Dean Hawkins deserves a chance. So Levi Havili can come on, soak up the first 2 minutes of the game, and then we can unleash Damien Cook for the remaining 60. This isn't a particularly informed Roosters team right now. They didn't look very good last week at all. There's no Luke Keary. It's a halves combination of Sandon Smith and Sam Walker. Sam Walker, who I don't think has played particularly well for quite a while now. And as long as their forwards can aim up, which is easier said than done with how South forwards have played the first 2 weeks, as long as their forwards can aim up, they're every chance of winning this game.
There's a lot to cover here. I like the Cook move as well. He's been an 80-minute hooker for a really long time now, and it's hard to be an 80-minute hooker in the modern game and still have a great attacking output. You know, in these first 2 weeks of the season, he's been, I think everyone would say, he's been a bit below his best. He only had the 2 runs last week, and it's a bit of a cliche to say Damian Cook should just run the ball all the time, but the best Souths have looked this season was sort of that first 30 minutes in Vegas where he was running a lot.
He was really good.
He was looking great. So anything that sort of gives him the chance to use the strengths of his game a lot more, I'm really going to like. We haven't said the words Jack Whiten yet, and he's making his debut for Souths in this one. I wrote about this a little bit earlier this week, but you guys have heard me talk about Jack Whiten so much over the years. And now you get the chance to hear Bungard talk a lot about him. So what are you expecting from Jack Whiten at left center? What do you think he can bring to this team?
Whatever negative things I've said about Jack Whiten in the past were wrong and misplaced. I will start with that. But in all seriousness, no matter what negative things I have or anyone said about Jack Whiten, what you can't argue with is his passion and his attitude and his ability to break a game open on the day. He is going to bring something to this team that they sorely need, and that is energy. He is going to be firing rockets up people left and right. He is not going to let this game get into a lull. He's not going to let Souths have this game slowly slip out of their fingers or quickly slip out of their fingers as they have done in the past 2 weeks in some like random 10-minute stretch in the second half. He's such an energetic guy. He's such an aggressive and competitive guy when he's on the field that I think his strengths, not just with the ball, but with his attitude and the way he can lift everyone around him, are really what this team needs right now. They really are. Could it go poorly? Could he overplay his hand and throw two passes in the stands? Absolutely. But I don't care, because I'd rather have a guy there that's G-ing everybody up and trying to keep everybody focused and to the task at hand and telling them to get stuck in and saying, oh, F these guys and all this stuff. I'd rather have that than just another guy watching the game pass them by, as that's all we've had for the first 2 weeks.
Whiten can have that in him, though. There have been games in the past for Canberra where he has just sort of let games pass him by, but I don't think that'll happen tonight. I think he'll be super fired up. I think he'll bring a lot of muscle down that left edge. I think he'll bring some intensity and some aggression on both sides of the ball. And that's a task to which he's well suited. And I think it's exactly what Souths need. You know, I think he'll end up being a big, big success at Souths this season. I think the change of scenery will freshen him up and do a lot of good. And I think he'll make a really, really big impact. Is that enough for me to tip Souths? I'm not as sure, you know, like the Roosters are coming off a 5-day turnaround from Sunday. Which is always a tough thing.
It's a bit of a stitch
to deal with. And they were really, really.
They should have lost by a lot more.
They should have, but God, I keep looking at the team and seeing all the talent in there.
You've done this for 3 years, Nick.
I know. And I should learn, but I don't, you know, at this point, there's almost no point talking about what we like about the Roosters, because it should be really, really apparent. Like, you see all the talent in there, you know, and I think that they should be able to handle Souths in the middle of the field a little bit. I think they should be more aggressive and powerful and dynamic. I know Sandon Smith isn't exactly a superstar, but like we've said with Kieran Walker before, and it's almost a similar situation with Hawkins, all he's got to do is get it to the guys around him and things should be okay. I'm probably still leaning to the Roosters because I just never learn, really. I did look at Souths long and hard, because if Souths can't fire up, if Souths can't show something after the week they've had and after everybody lining up to sort of sink the boot in, then when are they going to be able to do it? You know?
Great question, Nick. On the Question Time show on Wednesday, patreon.com/rookies, we were asked about our Rugby League Mandela effects. And just in the lead up to this is a great one. The Judd Rear Hargraves is one club man. Is a great Mandela effect, because people forget that he played 6 games for Manly.
He did.
And so he's playing his 300th game tonight, and I forgot that it's not his 300th game for Roosters. So they get 2 300 game celebrations for him in about the space of 6 weeks, which is lovely stuff.
Yeah, I think is he going to end up breaking the all-time Roosters cap record by the end of the season?
I looked it up the other day. It's Mitch Orbison, and it is 306. So yes, he probably will.
So he should. Well, assuming he doesn't get, you know, a lengthy suspension, which is always a possibility.
Don't assume,
fella. He kind of just wore me down. You know, like Warrior Hargraves, because of the way he plays, because of the aggression and the intensity and all of that. For a long time, he was an eminently dislikable player. You know, he's at a club like the Roosters who don't mind playing the villain and all of that. And I think there were plenty of times in the past where I kind of thought, okay, well, Hargraves is looking pretty washed up. We're not going to have to put up with this for much longer. Mm. But then he just kept hanging around. Every time I thought it was over for him, he'd come back and start playing great footy again. And then eventually I sort of found myself thinking, wow, I actually really like Jarryd Waria Hargraves. You know, yeah. And part of that is because, you know, yeah, I've said it on the show before. When you interview, when you speak to him away from the field, nice he's guy. Actually, he's a really, really nice guy, really generous with his time, really thoughtful. And just the complete opposite of what he's like on the field. And as I've gotten older, I actually find that I really like guys like that. I like guys who on the field, you know, can be maniacs, but then off the field are really good fellas. You know, I really respect people that sort of have that switch that they can flick once they go into games. And now Hargraves is sort of like one of the great warhorses of our time. So yeah,
warhorse is a great term to describe.
Yeah, so 300 games, a great achievement for him.
150 for Cam Murray as well. So a couple of milestones in this one. So,
exciting stuff.
Yeah. All right. We move on to New South Wales RL Super Saturday. Belmore, Cogra, Leichhardt. What could you ask for? Some sicko is going to go to all three. I wish it was us.
I did think about going to Belmore and Leichhardt for a hot second there.
what if we did all three, Nick?
I don't know if it's possible.
You'd have to leave the Dragons game at like halftime.
Yeah, yeah. So you know what is for sickos though?
The Bulldog Cole training either of these teams.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. He thinks he did. Oh,
Cole train carp.
I'm gonna do it.
But who?
I'm gonna do it.
But who?
Okay, so the Bulldogs, as we know, are not very good.
Favorites, though.
The Titans lost in round one by 30 points by nearly 30 points to a team that then lost by 40 points in round two.
That's not great.
The Bulldogs are at home at Belmore. Their spiritual home as well as their actual home. And the Titans have won 5 games outside of Queensland in the last 3 years.
It's not many.
But I think it's about to be 6.
Wow.
I am taking the Titans. Just because I think there's more points in them. I think Kieran Foran's inclusion is really big. I think Fotawaka and Fa'asua Malawi are going to be able to do just about whatever they want against the Bulldogs' middles. And I am going to ride the lightning and trust the insanity of the Titans to give me a crucial away win in the Coltrane Cup.
Yeah, the away tip was alluring. I did briefly consider the Titans, but I ended up staying away from this game. I just need to see a couple more Titans games. Not that you can ever get a read on the Titans because they are nature's mistake, but I just want to get a couple more games out of them just to get a proper read on them. And same with the Dogs. Like I would rather for me.
I feel like you think you have a good read on the Dogs.
Yeah, no, sorry. What I was going to say with the Dogs is I'm probably eyeing off waiting for like an Origin game where they get to play a team.
That's what I'm doing there. That's what I'm looking for.
But I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't have minded going to this game, but I'd rather just watch it at a pub near Leichhardt Oval, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah, I think the way for Canterbury to attack this game is similar to the way they attack the game against the Sharks. So, like, play expansive footy, throw it around as much as you can. I know we gave Matt Burton a lot of stick for his performances over the last 2 weeks, but I did think there were some okay signs against the Sharks. I liked him just pushing up the middle of the field a lot and latching onto offloads and really trying to just sort of hit gaps off people. I think he had almost 100 running meters against the Sharks, and this is the first time he's done something like that in quite a while. So maybe they're getting closer to getting something going there. Like if you run and gun against the Titans, you sort of do that at your peril. That's almost the one thing that they're actually good at. So I don't know. I think it's a bad stylistic matchup for the Dogs. And even though all logic and reason go out the window most of the time when the Titans play, I think they have a little bit too much strike in them.
I agree with that.
For Canterbury to handle.
Have you got the NRL, like, have you got the draw and stuff up in front of you on the computer?
No.
Okay. So I think that, like, because I click, obviously, going through the games, you see the team list and they've got little profile pictures of all the players, right? Now that he's wearing a Bulldogs jersey, Josh Curran looks like Josh Reynolds in disguise.
He does too, yeah.
Yeah. It looks like if Josh Reynolds has put on a fake mustache and, like, put on a mullet wig and is trying to go back to training as like some unknown guy from the country, and it turns out it's Josh Reynolds. And at the end, it's a big reveal. Everyone goes, "Wow, Josh Reynolds!"
What? Like, so they say, "So what's your name?" And he says, "Josh," immediately, because you know it's just a reflex. And then they go, "All right, what's your last name?" And someone held up a packet of Sultanas. Current, Curran, Josh Curran.
Yeah. Fuck, man, he looks like him.
He really does. Yeah, wow, I'd never seen that before. The headgear makes it tough.
That's it. I think the Bulldogs jersey as well. Like, I probably wouldn't have made this observation if he still had the Warriors kit on. But
yeah. Liam Knight back for the Dogs, a player of a lot of ability. And I think if they are going to sort of solidify things up in the middle of the field, he's theoretically the guy who should do it. Played really well in reserve grade last week. Ran for, I think, close to 160 metres. Has always sort of struggled to apply his talent in first grade consistently.
An insanely talented forward.
A very talented forward. But if he can just be a little bit of what he was at South, or even what he was at the Raiders, I always quite liked him there, that will give Canterbury a huge boost because they really are coming off a low base in the middle of the field. But
yeah, those first two seasons at South, 19-20, I think, were quite good, and then just sort of kind of went backwards at that
point. Isn't it crazy that he's a big part of the reason they didn't keep Reynolds?
I don't like to think about that.
Yeah.
But it is true. Yep. People can read about that if they want. I won't. All right.
We're in the footy down era, baby.
Oh, yeah, I'm tipping the Titans, by the way. Sorry. Moving on. 5:30, Dragons, Cowboys, Cogra. Won't be there, unfortunately. This one was too hard to get to. This was in the too hard basket. Can't go to all three. The 5:30 game, as you've said, is often the forgotten middle child of Super Saturday. But you know what? This could be closer than people think just because the Cowboys don't have a great record in Sydney.
They don't. I guess it really comes down to which of the Dragons was more real to you, round one or round two. I tend to lean towards round two. Jesse Marski's debuting at hooker. It's a great success story. He captained North Sydney's reserve grade team last year. And I like that Luciano Lelua is starting for Saints. I think him and Sua, that's a really nice back row combination. But the Cowboys just have so much attacking upside all over the field to the point where, like, in a game like last week, they cannot play well and still win because there's just so many points.
I think that's the mark
of
a good team. And you also have to think that there's no way they can play that badly again.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. He thinks he did. Oh!
Cold train carp.
Nick, I'm also tipping a Queensland team away at a Sydney suburban ground. But it's not the Titans. It's the Cowboys.
How did Dave Taylor not play for either of these teams?
It feels like Dave Taylor played for the Cowboys. Can we just retcon that?
Can we Mandela effect it?
Yeah. Wait. No, because Mandela effect is stuff that didn't happen. We need to retcon it. Just pretend it did happen.
Can we gaslight something or somebody?
Yes. You don't know how to gaslight people.
I know. That's why I was hoping that context clues would help me figure out what it actually means.
I'm gaslighting you right now.
Well, it's either gaslight or you're either the gaslighter or the gaslighty.
Yeah, and you just got lit up. Anyway, I'm cold training the Cowboys in honor of their club legend, Dave Taylor, who played many fine games for this club.
Well, I feel like if the Cowboys can show the things they showed against the Knights in the second half, you know, where I felt like their forwards really got going. I thought McLean and Tamalolo were two of their better games in a while. I don't know if Saints are going to be able to go with them through the whole 80 minutes. So it wouldn't surprise me if Saints are competitive for probably the first half. But then in that period after halftime, before the Saints starters come back on, that the Cows sort of like kick it up another couple of notches. Fini Fuiaki is going to be starting on that left edge for the
loved
next
him last week. Thought he was awesome.
For the next month or so as Lukey recovers. I think there's a chance that he holds onto that spot and then Lukey takes that role as the bench guy. We've talked about him, about Fini Fuiaki at length. I thought he carried the ball really well against the Knights, but there were a couple of times where he wasn't quite running the right lines. You could see Dearden getting into him a little bit, but I think the more time he gets out there with Dearden on that edge, the better combination they're going to be able to strike up. So I'm expecting the Cows to really run away with this one late and sort of dazzle us a little bit. Maybe some jazz hands from Scott Drinkwater along the way, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping, mate, but by the time we're standing on Leichhardt Oval at 7:35, that we're both 3-0 in the Cold Train Cup.
What a moment that would be.
What a story that would be. All right, and the big game. The last time we were here, the Tigers did score 60 points.
Yeah, and Stafford Toll was the best center in the world.
The best we've ever seen. 4 tries. But, they are $3.85 outsiders at time of recording against the Sharks team that was very good in round one and kind of just bumbled around a little bit last week. But yeah, they deserve to be favorites this week. They deserve to be favorites for this game. And I think they will take care of business pretty comfortably.
It's a really good matchup for the Sharks and a really bad one for the Tigers, because we saw what Canberra were able to do to the Tigers down the edges last week. And if there's one club that you don't want to have leaky edges against, it's the Sharks. You know, they're so good at attacking both sides of the field. They're so good at forming up their attack really, really quickly. Like Teague Wilton last week was outstanding. Sifa Talakai and Ronaldo Mulitalo have both been terrific through their first two games. And this it does really seem like a tailor-made matchup for the Sharks. It sounds like such a low bar for the Tigers to clear, but they put together like 20 good minutes against the Raiders. I think if they could put together 40 good minutes against the Sharks, then that's at least they're building on something. And if you sort of zoom out a little bit, like if the Tigers are able to keep this really, really tight and attack up the middle of the field a lot, like they did in that good period against the Raiders, maybe there could be some joy for them. You know, like we talk about the Sharks forwards a lot, and I'm not saying the Tigers are going to be able to, you know, crack them in the middle of the field or whatever, but I think that's a good area for the Tigers to try and build their game around. But when you're talking about a team's pass mark being 40 good minutes against a side, it kind of shows the difference between the two of them, you know. But I think that's what the Tigers need to do. They need to show the discipline to keep attacking up the middle of the field. I think Benji mentioned last week in his presser that when they were doing that well against the Raiders, they sort of lost it. When they lost their heads and went for two little chip kicks instead of trying to keep building pressure. So I think that's something that they'll be looking for this week, to sort of like stay on the job for a little bit longer. I think Caesar at halfback will help that. But yeah, you got to go the Sharks, don't you? You got to go your beloved black, white, and Bluesters.
They will win this game. The men in the black, white, and blue, the black, white, and Bluesters. You get, yes, the Roosters team song that you've just bastardized. So, nevertheless, Cronulla easy win, I think.
Yeah, it's hard to see it sort of going any other way. It's hard to talk about this Cronulla team in any sort of new or fresh way, because the team is so settled and everything has sort of been very similar for quite a while now. You know, unless it's the Sharks taking on one of the really good teams in the competition, it's difficult to think of a new spin on them. You know, like it would not surprise me in the slightest if the Sharks win this by 20 points plus, Nicho Hynes gets 48 Dally M points, Talakai gets 2, Mulitalo gets 2, Wilton runs through a bunch of blokes, and it's like, well, we've seen all this before. There's no new way to talk about it. The only sort of fresh level the Sharks can hit is if they start competing with those big sides. And other than that, it's just sort of like a lot of stuff that we've already seen.
To be fair, they did that in round one. They've passed 100% of their big side test so far.
They did. Well, you think the Warriors are going to come 14th. So are they really a big side?
So you don't.
Well, there you go.
Wow. Schrodinger's 14th. Sunday.
But yeah, be a great day. Be a great day. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, don't be afraid. Come say hello if you see us. It's all right. Nick didn't like that. He doesn't want you to come say hi. He hates you all.
Now you're just putting words in my mouth.
The sheer contempt that crept over your face when I said, come say hi.
No, it's just, you know, come say good day. It'll be all right. I don't bite.
Bite someone. Do it. Keep them guessing.
I will bite one lucky fan. Roaches. It could be you.
But CommBank Stadium, 4:05 PM. Why 05? Get the hell out of here. Parramatta, Manly. I don't know what to make of this one. I think this is a genuine coin flip between Parramatta team that had some good patches last week, and of course the team of the podcast, who are equal first.
Yeah. I'm going with Manly, but honestly, it's only because they're the team of the podcast, and I haven't tipped them yet this year. And I was like, well, you got to get on board at some point, Campton. Damn.
Well, they don't need you.
Hang on, it's the team of our podcast.
Well,
man.
I tipped them
of
last week.
Of course they need me.
I tipped them last week. Well, I believe.
What do you want, a fucking medal? Like,
well, right now I would get a medal. Yes,
a medal that says "Tipped Manly in round 2". Yeah,
correct.
You earned that one. You earned that one, son. Yeah, like I have been impressed with Manly in these first 2 weeks. I would like to see him really sort of let that attack go a little bit. You know, they created so many chances against the Roosters, and I think we're both right in saying that they sort of left a few tries on the board there. I still can't believe that game was 3-3 because Manly was so much better. But I would like it if they were a little bit more clinical. You know, if they were able to sort of execute some of the chances they were creating a little bit better. And I think that'll come as all the guys sort of get more time together. You know, as they all sort of get used to the way that they all play a little bit more. Luke Brooks can be a very sort of frantic and fast player sometimes, and sometimes to his detriment. But I think once everyone plays with him a little bit more, everyone gets on the same page a little bit more, I think their attack will become a little bit more clinical, and they'll be able to make the most of a lot of the chances they create. I think they'll look at some of the matchups they have. I think they'll really go after Blaise Talangi, who's debuting in the centres for Parramatta. Tough place to debut, centre.
Great name, though.
Blaise, oh, it's a great rugby league name. I would say an instant Hall of Fame rugby league name.
Blaise Talangi.
And then Morgan Harper's on the wing. I guess there's maybe a chance that Talangi actually starts out there and Harper's in the centres, but regardless, I think it's something that Manly will really look to target. I'm expecting another really big one from Olokoatu. I like any Manly game plan that is just get it to the big fella. So yeah, I'm liking Manly in this one. What do you think?
First of all, do you know Blaze was my confirmation name?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
There's a Saint Blaze?
Yeah, I picked it because it was cool. Saint Blaze.
I didn't even know you were confirmed.
Yeah, year 6, mate. Catholic primary school. What are you going to do?
Yeah, well, I wasn't allowed to pick anything cool.
What was yours? Like
William.
Yeah, boring. Meat and potatoes name.
Well, if I'd have picked something like Blaze, my mother would have boxed the ears off me. Like, we took confirmations very seriously in my family.
Mate, some of us can carry a name like Blaze. Others are more of a William. So, yeah.
What's your middle name again?
John.
So you're Matthew John Blaze Bungo.
I don't think the confirmation name is on, like, it's not on my birth certificate or anything. No, it's not a legal name. But yes, Matthew John Blaze Bungo. Incredible shit. I'm intrigued by this. It hasn't really been talked about, but this is the first time Moses and Brooks have faced off on, like, competent teams. So that's exciting.
Yeah, wow. I hadn't even thought of that. You know, brothers in arms turned.
Yeah, because it was like Moses against Brooks, but it was always like Moses on pretty decent Para teams against, like, you know, quite poor Tigers teams. But now we got a Manly team.
I don't know if Brooks would have ever beaten Moses. When was the last time Para beat or West beat Para? It'd be a while ago, I'd imagine.
Question. I'll pull it up real quick while you keep talking about Luke Brooks for a second.
Well, I already talked about him a little bit, and I talked mainly more about Manly, so let's talk a little bit more about Para. Yeah, look, they did do all right against Penrith. They just sort of struggled to stay applied through the 80 minutes and sort of keep their physicality up at a level that it needed to be. Little bit worried about their bench.
He's won once. Monday, Jackson Hastings field goal.
Oh, yeah, that was a great game. I love that game.
Yeah, only once, though.
A little bit worried about...
twice. 2018, Luke Brooks 30, Mitch Moses 20. Also Easter Monday.
Well, there you go. And this is
Tui Lolahia in the 21 jersey.
Oh, you got to love that. And this game isn't Easter Monday, but it is like a week before Easter. So does that come into play?
Yeah, what's going on here? All right, because they're not the West Tigers. He plays for Manly now. Get it together, Matt.
hopped up on Ilias Rage and not seeing clearly.
I really am.
What would Saint Blaise think of you?
I don't know. He was the patron saint of, like, wool or some shit. I don't fucking know.
Hang on. How can a vegan be confirmed up with the patron saint of wool?
I wasn't a vegan when I was 11 or however old. Patronage, infants, animals, bang, builders, stone cutters, bang, Simpsons, carvers, drapers, wool workers, veterinarians, physicians, healing, roads, the sick, against choking. And he's fucking hell.
What?
Yeah, Souths do choke a lot, don't they? I thought that's what you were doing. Oh, but animals are on there and stone cutters, and he's against choking. So, I mean,
it's choking. Such like, it must have been a Friday or something, and it's 4:30, and they were like,
chuck
okay.
It all down.
Okay, this Saint Blaze, like, he's already a bit of a show pony with his goddamn name. Like, he's for, what's he going to be against? What's he going to be against?
And what is some choking?
Some cardinal goes, choking? But yep, good enough. Let's go. Game over. How can one saint be the patron of so many things?
I feel like if you click on any, like, I feel like they all have like 20 things. I think. I don't know.
It says Saint William is the patron. Well, there's a lot of Saint Williams. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
All right, your job for the midweek is to find out which of those 11 you're confirmed after.
Okay. I love it. I love it when we get theological on here, man.
Theology chat. That's what people want on a
that's
Friday.
That's, you know what people want to gear up for the weekend? Some hardcore Catholicism chat.
Well, you know what? That's what they're getting.
That's what they're getting.
Yeah, I've tipped Manly in this one. I think it will be a really, really competitive game, though. And
yeah, well, let's talk a little bit more about Parramatta because we've talked plenty about Manly. What's standing out about this Parra team to you?
Well, no, Bailey Simonson is a bit of a shame. As we mentioned, he's been quite good since he got there. I think they might honestly have won that game had he been there last week. I do love that Peaky Blinders character Luca Moretti is back on the bench. Not that I know that much about him. I just love his name. Makes me think of Adrian Brody's character in Peaky Blinders. But your man, Rumoru Greig, still sitting there in the jersey 19, still can't crack back into that team.
Great in Reggie's last week. Ran for like 170 or something.
Before he got injured last year, he was quite handy for Parramatta in that rotation. But I guess he's just fallen behind a couple of the other guys. But that is a bit curious.
Bring him home. Bring him home, Brad.
Yeah, I think so. But I think Parramatta played well enough to beat Penrith in patches last week. I think they played quite well. They gave a pretty good account of themselves. And I think that both of these teams so far have given very good accounts of themselves in their two rounds so far. You can't really read too much into beating the Bulldogs, but they kept them at arm's length. They took care of business. This game, to me, is going to be really close. I do think Manly will just edge it in a close one, but should be a really good game.
I was trying to talk about the Parra bench before, and I misspoke like four times saying I don't like it. I actually kind of like it because I think there's an opportunity for them to really take control of the game once Paseka goes off for Manly. So Paseka was fantastic last week. And I think if Parra can sort of hold their own in those opening exchanges, I'm assuming they'll make that Madison-Barlo switch again. I think when Madison and Barlo come on, they should be able to...
Junior Paolo's been dropped. Sensationally.
They should be able to get a little bit of ascendancy in the middle of the field. I'm expecting a big one for Nathan Brown from Manly. I thought he was good last week. And I think his split with Parra maybe wasn't the most amicable. And Nathan Brown's the sort of player who never needed an excuse to fire up, but now he's definitely got one. So excited to sort of see what he can do with it. Going Manly, but again, yeah, a tight one, definitely.
And finishing off the Sunday evening nightcap. The Knights hosting the Storm.
The nightcap.
The nightcap. No Greg Marzu, I think, is a big out. But, of course, the big news is that Jackson Hastings has been dropped and Jack Cogger is the halfback.
What do you think of this move? I kind of like it.
Well, we got asked on the question show which of the two you'd drop for, and we both said we'd drop Hastings and keep Gamble. And we were right.
I think Cogger is going to be able to fix things a lot for them. I know that there's so much talk about how well he did in the grand final to the point where it's actually probably become a little bit overblown. But if you look at what he did in that game, it was nothing fancy. It was just getting the ball, going straight to the line, going out the back and allowing Nathan Cleary and a couple of other guys to create stuff, which sounds really simple, but it's hard to do because if it was easy, everyone would do it. If he can just do that and set stuff up for Gamble and Ponga and Best and Gagai and all the rest, that can go a long, long way to making the Knights a whole heck of a lot more dangerous. And I think Hastings, like he's one of his big strengths in the past has been his kicking game. And I think ever since he sort of had that ankle injury in his last game for the Tigers, and then he had another ankle injury last year, I don't think his kicking game has really been as big a strength. And that's what he sort of builds the rest of his play on. So once he loses that, then it's kind of harder for him to make an impact. Greg Vlahos not playing is really big, but the Storm won't have Jerome Hughes. He's suspended for a couple of weeks for pushing the referee in that win over the Warriors. I am tipping the Knights. I don't feel good about it, but I think they're a bit like Souths, where if they can't turn it on now after losing two games like that, they'll get a big rowdy home crowd up at Marathon Stadium. Obviously, the Storm's still really, really good. Still got Pappenhausen, still got Grant, still got all that. But I think if the Knights can come correct in the middle of the field, Cogger straightens up that attack, gets some stuff going for Ponga, I think they can win this game.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you just said. I think that they needed to get a little bit more out of Phoenix Crossland, and I would hope that the addition of Cogger sparks Gamble to fire up a little bit as well. I think both those guys have just not been good enough for them in the first 2 weeks of the season, but they've shown in the last year especially that they're both capable of so much more. No, Hughes is massive, obviously, but yeah, Jonah Pezzett has been an admirable deputy, and he'll obviously take over most of the playmaking reins for this week. Again, with Hughes out, I think that swings it a little bit to Newcastle's favour. I just think that the Storm have a little bit more quality across the board, and no Greg the Leg. That's really going to hurt them with yardage and stuff. And the Storm, yep,
definitely.
The Storm are the masters of field position, getting you down your own end and keeping you down there. And those carries he gives you 10, 15 metres are so invaluable. And you're just not going to have those with Inari Tuala, I don't think. So I've picked the Storm, but I think it will be a close game as well. We can't say that for every game, but honestly, I think there will be just quite a few close games.
Yeah, look, I don't know if the Storm are the masters of pinning you down your own end. I don't know if they've got the kicking game for that. But while they do have probably a little bit more quality across the field, I think it's going to be hard for them to create as many chances without Hughes. I think over the last 12 months or so, he's become the best player on the team, and he's become the most important attacking player on the team as well. And while, as long as Grant and Pappenhausen are there, Grant's going to be able to threaten up the middle. Pappenhausen's going to be able to threaten him in support and chime in on the edges as he did to great effect last week. I just don't know if they're going to have the overall athleticism to overwhelm this night side. And I also think the Storm are coming off two big emotional wins. You know, like I think they really spent a lot in getting those two wins. And it wouldn't surprise me if then there's a bit of a flat spot, even if it's just for a week. Not wild about tipping the Knights, because I haven't been that impressed with them over the last couple of weeks. But if they can't fire up for a game like this, then maybe they can't fire up at all. And I'm tipping them to do so, probably against my better judgment. What about the Munster stuff? Isn't that nuts?
Simi Renrandra trying the chip and chase. Oh, no, it's Simi Redradra. Redradra's away. Simi Redradra.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh, yes, it will, yes.
Simi Renrandra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Renrandra.
All right, and it is news time. I'm glad you said that, because I'd written that down. Yeah, what a segue. News to talk about. That's incredible for you. Because I didn't even tell you we were going to talk about it, because I only remembered it like halfway through the show. I was like, oh, shit, we've got to talk about the Cam Smith hot mic. I will defend our good friends at SEN, first of all. I have done exactly what they did 3 months ago when you did that interview with Luke Bateman, which was that you did some innocent chat after the show had finished recording. What happened was you sent me the file. I listened to it on Google Drive. I got to the end where you said goodbye, everyone, and I closed it. And then I chucked it into Audacity, put the bumpers on it, and didn't realize that there was 2 or 3 minutes of chat after you'd said goodbye that you hadn't just stopped the recording for. And thankfully, it was all very innocent chat, and I just got rid of it, and that was fine. So that's how mistakes like that can happen, just giving some people some insight. I don't know what happened at SEN to leave that stuff in, but if you missed this, Cam Smith was on the Captain's Run show with Denon Kemp. And after they believed they were off air, but the mic was still on, he very candidly started talking about Cam Munster and how no one at the Storm has a clue what's going on, and that he could be out for ages, and that this whole
situation—he's not running right now. Yeah.
And someone at SEN uploaded that whole thing onto the podcast. It was eventually taken down and re-uploaded without that hot mic stuff, but people obviously heard it, recorded it, and it's now on the internet forever. So, yeah, whoever made that mistake, keep your head up, because I've made that exact mistake too. But yeah, that's not the story. The story here is that Cam Munster's injury may be far worse than we actually thought.
It sounds a bit scary.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit scary. Like if the Storm don't know when he's going to be back, or if it sounds like they don't even really know what's wrong with him. And if it's that serious, maybe it's the kind of thing that could take months to sort out. Maybe all of a sudden we're looking at a whole lot more Jonah Pezzett than anyone was really expecting. And I really, really rate Jonah Pezzett, but you know, he's not Cam Munster. There's only one of those. And the implications for this, I think, ripple out pretty widely. Like, is he going to be able to play Origin this year? You know, is a Queensland going to miss him like Melbourne are missing him? Like, I don't know. You're talking about one of the very best players in the entire sport. And if you've got like no time frame on his return, that's kind of crazy. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, it's a big, big issue for them if he's not back. And it's just, I think it's one thing to, when you get like sort of vague club speak, it's entirely another to hear Cam Smith, who is, of course, extremely connected with what's going on at Melbourne at all times, saying very candidly in what he thinks is a private conversation, yeah, he's cooked it. It's not good. How's it? The like humble brag from Smith in that chat as well. He's like, oh, yeah, I never got hurt. That's just because I didn't run very much. It's like fucking incredible.
You know what? I think there's only one way Cam Smith can make this right. Out of retirement.
Yep. Come on.
Do it, bro.
He could still play.
Of course he could. Of course he could, man.
Yeah. And some other news. Ben Hunt has said that Zach Lomax wants to leave. We kind of already knew that.
Dudes are just out here saying stuff.
I fucking love this. This is great. More dudes should just say things. Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, yeah, I think Hunto might have been a bit too honest for his own good here. It wasn't a secret that Lomax was thinking of leaving, right? Like, that's sort of been in the water for a couple of weeks. So all Hunt is saying is something that we all kind of knew to be true anyway, but the fact that he has sort of put a name on it and the fact that it's the club captain saying, yeah, we've talked about it and he says he wants to go, it's very honest. It's a lot more upfront than you come to expect from a lot of this stuff, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I'd love him. I'm sure you'd love him. He'll probably just go to the Roosters, won't he?
No, I still think Para. I still think Para's going to be a good fit, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, great player, I think. I think he's, you know, I had a rough one in the second week, but I thought he was really good in that opener.
Mate, he still carried the ball really well.
He wasn't bad. It's hard to shine in a 38-0 loss, yeah. But he had some nice carries.
He's taken to the wing a lot more than I thought he would. But I think the longer he's on the wing, the more likely he is to leave. And I actually think leaving probably wouldn't be the worst thing for him. I think he might need a change. He's sort of been, he was the prince at the Dragons for a really long time. And maybe leaving and a kick up the ass from a new coach can sort of, a kick up the ass in a new environment can sort of help reset him a little bit. So, yeah, I think the longer it goes on, the more likely he is to leave, but it might not be the worst thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, you got anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
That's about it. I think we've had a longer one today, but you know, you had to purge those earliest emotions. Had to get them out there, mate.
I just found the fallout of all of this so stupid. It's so silly.
Well, man, last week we had Sad Guard on Friday. This week we had Mad Guard. Yeah. So it's
good. Right. After we win, so I'm going to smash through some windows at the pub and become Bad Guard.
Bad Guard. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't take him home to mama. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, very good.
All right. Before we get out of here, a quick thank you to the people in the top two tiers on our Patreon subscription service. Go to patreon.com/NRLRookies. You get access to our Discord server, a third show every single week, merch discounts, and Nick and I will confirm you. We'll give you a confirmation name of your choosing.
You need to have a sponsor at your confirmation, but you know, it's better than that having two.
Yeah.
Imagine being confirmed and me and Bungard stand behind you, one hand on each shoulder.
You did it, son.
Saint Boom Rookie.
Saint Coltrane. All right. Thank you to a perverted female listener. Sup, Chris Avnell, Dave, Michael Owen too, but at least we haven't lost a scrum feed. Murray, fuck. Stu Wayno worships Wilson when he whacks weak woeful wingers. Adam Small, Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the pie eating pom, Butsy, Campo was right. I did say we. Chewbacca Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David digging coal with Danny Levi, and anonymous backer Ed Burton. Fuck him. Good to see you commit to something. Future Johnny Warren medalist Jed Drew. Son of Brad Drew, future Man of Steel runner-up Lachlan Ilias, Gordon Dallas versus Ben Ross. He's got gall. He's got guile. That's hilarious because you mentioned guile. That's not a family member. That's our good friend Luke who's doing the bossy commentary lines every week.
I don't remember that gall guile line.
I don't either. But like, it's just weird that you said the word guile on the show earlier, and
the Camptons are famous for our guile. We got nothing.
Unbelievable.
Else. Never stop.
I hear your mum's going out with Squeak. I, Matthew Bungard, challenged Moses Leota to a run it straight challenge for Campo's love. I would run it. I would do that for you. I would. And if you would do that for me, I don't care. If you don't think I'd run it straight at anyone for any of my friends, you're wrong. I would. I'd die, but that doesn't matter. Jason, Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, kicks ass out of the comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles, Midnight, Mads Taylor's version. Manly are no longer the team of the pod. Yes, they are, Hunter. Just accept it.
Give it up, Matthew Duggan. Hunter.
Morgan Watkins, my name is Nick Canton, and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad, never trendy. Nick Kotrick lives on my street, subliminally coaching him to run it straight. Appy is my daddy and Coates is my goat. Eeny, meeny, minor premiership. Sami Army, Paul Mac 78, Reese Brown, Rodrigo Medrado, and the curse of the accidental head clash. Roxanne Clark, Steve in Vegas, shipping up the Bostock, Shunter, the Black Vegetable, Thor, Tom Hardy, Woz, and Westlife Podcast. West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens. Thank you as well.
That was a wild one. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. All right. I'm going to go publish this show and mentally prepare for tonight when we, if we.
Which jersey are you wearing tonight?
No, it's Cam's 150th. So I think I got to go Cam Murray t-shirt.
Okay, cool. No, that's a good move.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got to, you know, for the boy. It's,
I can't wait for Friday morning when we have some real in-depth theology chat for Good Friday. You know, a real treat for our most devout listeners.
Praise be. All right. Say goodbye, Canvo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.